Greetings and salutations. It is July 18th, and it was the day after my 50th birthday. Oh my God, I'm so old. Anyway, it's Kimberly
Welcome
here.
To hey, the club,
hey, Stephanie.
Hi, good morning.
Hey,
good
you're the day. First person to serenade me.
Well, you knew that was coming.
Yeah, I should have known, huh? Well, we're totally excited because we have Renato Mariotti in the wings, so we're going to get to that in a minute.
With this ominous music in the background.
I know.
I don't know whether to get horny for my, hearkening back to my high school days with the scene from Risky Business.
Well, can't you feel it coming in the air tonight? I think it's coming in the air tonight.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
All right. Well, before we get started, I just want to say that, first of all, we only had one show last month, so apologies there. So just consider that our little vacation. And we'd really love it if you would support the show by becoming a monthly subscriber at patreon.com/startmeup. You can do $5 a month, which is going to get you into And Another Thing segment that we're going to do after we talk to Renato today. And we talk about all kinds of fun stuff that, it's not necessarily, private, but we get into some personal stuff on that show. And, you could just subscribe for $1 a month. That would be great. $1 a month is nothing. So that would be awesome if you could help support, indie podcasters. So there you go. So without further ado, we can't wait. We've been waiting for this for so long. So we're finally going to have the opportunity to talk to, former federal prosecutor and CNN legal analyst, Renato Mariotti. Hey, Renato.
Hey, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Great. Thanks for having me on the show.
God, I just, we've got so much to ask you.
It's like, we do.
So much. I'm just like freaking out over, I just was talking to Stephanie before we spoke, and she said like on one hand, she feels filled with fear, but on the other hand, or dread or whatever, but on the other hand, she's completely optimistic. So I'm going to hand things over to her so she can kind of like talk about that, because I know she has a few things that she wants to ask you. So I'm just throwing it over to her.
So hi, Renato. This is so wonderful because I've been listening to you and kind of hanging on your every word from time to time for the past year and a half. I wanted to add to your title and like resistance fighter extraordinaire because in this very scary time, never before have we seen such crime being committed. And it's got to be crime. I'm not a lawyer. I'm married to a lawyer, but I'm not a lawyer. I'm a law-abiding American. And I believe the president of the United States is a straight-up criminal. And what do we do? What can be done? And I, Kimberly and I were talking about this earlier. I don't want to wait till November. I want to know what we can do now. And from a legal perspective, which is where you come in, what does that look like?
I like to be the bearer of good news, not bad news. But one thing I will say is I am concerned for a number of reasons about whether or not there will be legal action that will ultimately have a substantial impact on the Trump administration. First, I will say as a former federal prosecutor, it is very challenging to prove crimes beyond a reasonable doubt. It's harder to get evidence than you might think. And proving intent in particular can be a challenge, particularly when you're dealing with people who are sophisticated white collar criminals. Those are the sort of crimes I used to investigate and prosecute, and it's not easy. And I think Bob Mueller is a cautious, thoughtful guy who's not going to go an inch further than he's able to prove. But in addition to that, I think by all indications, as to Trump himself, Mueller is going to be presenting charges to Congress. And I think we've all seen that Congress, the Republicans in Congress, are unwilling to be a check on Trump in any way. They're unwilling to hold him accountable. We saw on Friday an indictment of 12 Russian intelligence operatives who planned and executed an attack on the United States. And the refrain from Republicans was, this shows us why we need to shut down the Mueller investigation. And so I am concerned that the Mueller investigation is going to be shut down. I'm concerned it's going to be impeded. I'm concerned that no matter what happens and no matter what evidence is generated, that the Republicans will ignore it, will obstruct, and that is why ultimately the, you know, it may be on all of us. You know, you were talking about resistance. I view myself very much as a resistance fighter here, and I'm riding alongside so many others. And I think we have to take matters in our own hands and organize and get people to the polls. We need to make sure our side's energized because the country is going to rely on that.
Yeah, I mean, I think that we need to get to the polls, but then there's the issue of the fact that our elections are still not secure. And we just learned the other day that I think it was Russians had purchased some kind of, something having to do with our voting in Maryland, some kind of server or something having to do with election stuff in Maryland. And so I guess the attorney general here is looking into that. But I worry about across the United States, you know, especially in these places where not only is there suppression and the heavy gerrymandering, you know, I mean, can they get in? Can they hack the machines? Which I'm not altogether convinced they didn't do the last time. I mean, I know mainstream media and everybody reporting is saying, oh, no, we haven't found anything or whatever it is. But I'm not convinced that that Russians didn't hack our actual votes. I mean, they're saying they didn't find any evidence, and maybe there isn't. Maybe it was just that minds were changed. But that's what scares me, too, is that, you know, we've got this election coming, and I think we are energized. I don't think everybody's completely aware of what's going on, but I think that quite a few Americans understand. Like, I'll give you an example. The other day, I went to go buy a new phone, and I was speaking with this young woman, and, you know, it came out that I was an activist and this and that, and so I told her that I was a feminist. So she said, so I take it you don't like Trump? And I said, no. And so she didn't either. I had a feeling she didn't. And so when we were talking about it, I said, are you familiar with what's happening with this FBI investigation into the Russian attack? And she said, not really. So while she is motivated to vote, I think she's motivated by other, there's other issues that are on the top of her mind. The Russia thing, people aren't even talking about it because this Congress isn't doing anything about it.
Right,
so
right.
When Renata, when you say to outside of taking it into our, is like, what do you think of these protests outside the White House? Do you think that they're going to make a difference? And then after that, let's just say that we do get, at least we win back the House, then what can we do after that? So let's just take what do you think about these protests, and what do you think they might lead to? And then let's just go with we win the House. And then
lots of great questions. You had so many things that you just said that I want to react to, but to start with your immediate questions, you know, regarding the protests, one thing that I think has been happening, it's important with these protests, is they are calling out and drawing out people who have not been engaged in the political process before, mm-hmm. people who haven't been energized before. You know, when I helped organize the Keeping Families Together protest that we had here in mm-hmm. Chicago, they were all over the place. But, you know, I got a group of people together to attend that protest. And I had people, you know, all these moms from the suburbs who had never gone to a protest before, never gotten involved in the political process, who drove in from the suburbs and stood out there in the heat and felt strongly about that issue. And I think that what we're starting to see is, you know, we all know that political engagement is more than just casting your vote. And yes. My hope is that these protests draw out and engage and energize people who have been apathetic, because that to me is the biggest enemy mm-hmm. of our democracy right now, is apathy.
Yes.
So many people that I talk to on the street, people who, you know, when I run into them, who don't really care about what's going on, who feel powerless to change anything, who feel like it doesn't. Those are the people we have to energize. So I think those protests do matter from that perspective. And then if we do take back the House, if the Democrats take back the House, I think it's so important, because now you would have a body in government that would be controlled by Democrats that could investigate things. I mean, this Russian spy that was charged this week, Ms. Butina. She had been, the House Intelligence Committee had Democrats on the committee who wanted to interview her. Republicans on the committee refused to interview her. They weren't interested in it, which is shocking. Mir's a Russian spy. They're not interested in interviewing.
Yeah.
You know, here we could have an organ of our government, the House of Representatives, that could be conducting oversight, conducting investigations, you know, and also stopping the Republicans from doing things that are really harmful.
Yeah.
So I think it's really important.
Well, I mean, and I think that we can do those in those same kind of investigations that we just saw, the hearings, I should say, you know, with Peter Strzok. We could do that with Trump and Donald Trump and Ivanka Trump and all, you know, Roger Stone. We could have televised public hearings, which would, I think, hurt the Trump brand.
Yes, it would. Now, on that tip, as my 14-year-old son would say, I had the privilege of speaking with Ben Ray Lujan and Barbara Lee a few weeks ago about this exact thing. You know, if the Mueller investigation comes to a screeching halt, then what? One of the things that came up is all of the information that Mueller and his team have gathered becomes public. Is that right, Renato?
No. So in fact, you know, one thing that I think everyone should keep in mind is that the materials gathered as part of Robert Mueller's investigation are not public and can't be revealed to the public because of grand jury secrecy rules. So, you know, Mueller could write reports and send them to Rod Rosenstein. It's possible that those reports could become public. But remember, you know, even if he does that and writes reports, those reports are not all the evidence. The reports are just conclusions and summaries he wrote. You know, for example, you know, Kenneth Starr wrote a report. You know, he had a different statute, so there it was going to be a public report. He had the power to issue a report to Congress and make it public. But even there, you know, what we saw was, you know, I think it was written by, Brett Kavanaugh, the guy who's now potentially going to be our Supreme Court justice. But you saw a summary that was selectively chosen pieces of evidence by Starr and his team. So I think, you know, that's what would happen too. And I'm not saying that Mueller would be hiding evidence, but I mean, the raw evidence itself might never get out to the public. And that's why the congressional investigations could be important, because they can investigate and release information to the public.
Right. And back to, okay, so now let's fast forward to November. People get off their asses. They vote. We take back the House. Can Congress then bring articles of impeachment?
Sure. As long as the House votes, they can bring articles of impeachment. But remember, you know, what happened with Bill Clinton's impeachment, mm-hmm. where you had a House of Representatives that voted to impeach and it went nowhere in the Senate. So, mm-hmm. you know, the real question would be, could you get 67 senators to vote to impeach or to convict? And I'm very pessimistic about that for obvious reasons. Anyone has been paying attention, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, that I think that even though if let's just say we don't take the House and we don't have the votes for actual impeachment, the House can still conduct those public televised hearings. And, you know, it may not lead to Trump leaving office, but it may put a lot of information out there that we might never have seen. And I want to ask you a question, and this is the one that worries me the most as far as Kavanaugh. Excuse me. So it appears that if this investigation reaches the desk of the Supreme Court, whether it's about pardons or just getting rid of the investigation altogether or whatever, this Kavanaugh guy seems willing to do so. What do you think of that? I mean, that's what I'm worried about more than anything, because I feel as if we've got this investigation and the only thing that we've got right now is the hope that this will lead to some kind of evidence or proof. But if we've got a Supreme Court that's going to overrule that, and then and what I really want to know is this, could he be like a deciding factor? I mean, I know it would depend on how the other justices vote, but as far as like the double jeopardy, like trying it on a federal level and then trying it on a state level, can he put the kibosh on the state level, you know, investigations?
So I don't think he would be affecting state investigations, but he could say, for example, that the Supreme Court could say that a sitting president cannot be indicted. Yeah. And in fact, I would be surprised if Kavanaugh didn't come out that way, because he wrote that Law Review mm-hmm. article that a lot of people have seen, talking about how how important it is to not allow the president to be distracted. Now, of course, this is funny, given that Kavanaugh was the guy who authored the Starr report and was working for Kenneth Starr. I mean, spent years of his life chasing down Bill Clinton. So for him suddenly to have a change of heart after working in the Bush White House is interesting. Yeah. Now, some people who I admire, like Ben Vittes, really believe that, Kavanaugh had a sincere change of heart. I don't know. He seems like a partisan to me. But in any event, I'm very pessimistic about how Kavanaugh would come out on any issue that we would care about regarding the Mueller investigation. And that's a problem, because let's face it, there are some votes on that court that you can never imagine doing anything that would potentially harm Trump.
Right.
So, okay.
So that's why I said I'm not the bearer of good news. I wish I could be, but I like to be straight with people. So,
I appreciate that. And I feel that, I'm not feeling very hopeful at this point, but, so I want to ask you about the state thing. So you don't believe, or let me put this another way. Let's just say for whatever reason, Trump loses in 2020. Let's say he gets challenged by someone else and hopefully a Democrat wins and he loses. Does that mean then that state investigations or any kind of state charges can it all be done then? Like let's just say is there an AG of New York now?
Yeah, there is.
I don't.
A woman is actually a very accomplished lawyer who succeeded Schneiderman, who is his number two. What I would say though is that, yes, the investigations could continue. Yes, there could be charges at that time. But I'd say a couple of things. First of all, there are statute of limitations. Mm-hmm. I don't know the statute of limitations for every state, but the federal statute of limitations for crimes is generally 5 years from the date of the commission of the crime. In a rare circumstances, it's 10 years specifically. Cases where a financial institution is affected, like bank fraud, you can have a 10-year statute of limitations, but usually it's 5 years. Mm-hmm. So, what that means is there might be a limited window to, issue indictments after a new president came in. But, and I also think, and this may elicit some groans, but I'm just giving you my honest take of what could happen, not what should, is I could see a movement saying, oh, we should just, let it go and mm-hmm. move forward and heal and mm-hmm. so on.
Yeah, I could see that.
And I could see that potentially happening as well. It'll be interesting to see if that does happen. I think that's generally a pretty good result, getting a new president in 2020. I think that's a very realistic best case scenario for us. Mm-hmm. It'll be interesting to see how that would play out.
Well, okay, I love that you're being truthful. We need to hear this. We can't live, looking through rose-colored glasses, because this is serious. Our democracy is under siege. The way we live as Americans is in jeopardy. That could all change. So I like the straight talk, Renato. Thank you. And it actually motivates me to get out there and to remain active, to become more active, to use my voice and my, position in my community to involve people to get out and vote and to make calls and to, drive down to districts like California 22, which is where Andrew Janz is running against Devin Nunes. That's important that we do that. And as able-bodied people who are paying attention, we need to get into our cars, we need to get on our phones, we need to reach out to campaigns in districts that are not as blue can be, which is where I live in Oakland, California. And we need to help make a change. And that's really all we can do right now. Yes?
Exactly right. And it's important that we do what we can. Part of the reason that I try to be very straight about this is I want to confront what is not apathy, but I think there's this complacency where, oh, don't worry, it's all going to happen soon. Everyone's going to be let off in chains or whatever. I think, the chances of that happening are not great, and I don't think we should sit around and wait for that to happen. Just like, and to give you an example, you know, you mentioned earlier about the hacking of voting machines. I have no idea whether or not the voting machines were hacked or not. Mm-hmm. But I think that we all want to feel confidence, right, in our voting systems. Yes. So we should be making sure and pushing our elected officials. And I've been doing that in Illinois. I will tell you that I have pushed the Democratic nominee for attorney general to commit to investigate the attacks and the intrusions on our voting system. Mm-hmm. And he committed to do so. And I did that because I thought that was really it's an important and vital issue for our state. Even though Illinois didn't affect the outcome, everybody in our state needs to have a confidence that their information is secure in their vote.
Well, yeah, Illinois didn't necessarily have an effect in this past election, but you don't know about future elections.
Exactly.
Exactly.
And as a Californian, we weren't affected, but this is America. We have to look out for, I'm not trying to be Pollyanna. We have got to take care of the people in Michigan who were potentially hacked, or the people in the red states across the country who are fighting, and they may never turn their district blue, but we have to support them nonetheless. It's on.
So Renato, do you think then, would you say that at least at this vantage point, that probably the best case scenario that Americans can hope for is that we just get a new, first of all, that we can flip the House, possibly take some seats back in the Senate, and then in 2020 we get a new Democratic president. Do you see that as our best bet?
I think that's the best case scenario, and in fact, yeah, I think that's the best realistic case scenario. And I would add to that I think taking back the House and even holding ground in the Senate or gaining a seat or whatever would send a message to Republicans. You know, people ask all the time, why are the Republicans sitting on their hands? Why are they complicit, et cetera? The reality is the Republican base is very pro-Trump. Mm-hmm. And politicians, just a lot of these people just care about getting reelected. Mm-hmm. They would do anything to get reelected. And if they see that the country is moving in a different direction, it might inspire some of them to suddenly gain a spine. Mm-hmm. And that's what we really need in this country. You know, if there is any hope of any action being taken to ensure that justice is done regarding whatever Mueller ends up finding, it's going to take some work by Republicans. You know, there's going to be some patriotic Republicans joining Democrats, and hopefully there can be that change. And I'm hopeful because I'm a very positive person myself. But what it's going to take is victory on our side. Mm-hmm. If the Republicans hold the House, if they maintain or expand a majority in the Senate, what the lesson is going to be that if you hunker down, repeat lies, and kowtow to whatever Donald Trump wants, then you will be rewarded electorally. And that would be a disaster for
him. That would be a disaster. No.
So back to positive. Okay. Do you feel like we are at a slight turning point because of all this negative stuff that's coming out, because of what happened in Helsinki, because Brett Kavanaugh is not a great nominee, and there are organizations like NARAL Pro-Choice America, who their sole mission in life is to see to it that elected officials support a woman's right to choose, that we keep that intact. Now, it's a blip on the screen when you look at it across this country, but I believe in organizations like that holding elected officials' feet to the fire and saying, if you don't honor a woman's right to choose and have reproductive freedom, then we're gonna make your life miserable. We're gonna do everything we can to not get you elected. Mm-hmm. I feel like those voices are louder than ever now, and that's just NARAL's just one example. But when you rile, you know what I mean? I feel like, you know, I'm not going to swear, but don't mess with me, and don't mess with my sisters.
Yeah.
And do not for one moment underestimate the power of a woman on a mission. And that fuels me, and that gives me hope. And I just, as a man, Renato, Do you feel our power? Do you have faith in our ability to maybe push this over the edge? Because that's what I'm riding on right now.
Well, I will say I definitely feel the power and strength of women in the progressive movement and in politics. One thing that is an interesting thing is, you know, a little over a year ago, I couldn't have imagined myself being on this podcast with you talking about these subjects. And part of the reason why I'm here is because as I started expressing my views online, I interacted with a lot of folks who really influenced me and brought me, you know, convinced me of the importance of speaking out, the importance of doing whatever I could on these issues. And most of those people who influenced me were women, very strong women who are leaders in the resistance. And, you know, when I think of who are the people on Twitter or Facebook or wherever that influence me the most, the people on social media, they're almost all women who have really taken a leadership role, pushed me to constantly be doing more. I mean, you know, for example, Alyssa Milano is somebody who is constantly, every day, pushing progressive causes. And I just, her energy pushes me to do more. And I am excited about a lot of organizations, you know, here on the ground that I have been working with. You know, I've become more and more involved in reproductive rights myself. I'm the co-chair of Lawyers for Choice. And, you know, it is amazing the amount of energy and excitement there is on that issue and a variety of others. I mean, there are a lot of women on the issue of gun regulation who are, you know, really making a big difference and are finally changing that debate. It is exciting. And I think, you know, one thing that's amazing is it's really happening on our side of the aisle. You don't see Republicans having that level of energy because they frankly don't give women an opportunity to have any leadership or say or voice in their party, and their policies are anti-women.
Absolutely. I mean, the Republican Party really stands for that. It's a party of white men with money who never, ever want to relinquish their power. Mm-hmm. There's no, and I'm not trying to be dramatic. Everything points to that being their agenda. Mm-hmm. So we're gonna upset that apple cart. I'm not going down. I say this on a regular basis, but I'm like the knight in the Holy Grail who says he's got one leg and he's hopping and he's going to kick you to death or he'll bite your ankles. That's me. That's me in this fight. I know that's Kimberly in this fight. I have a feeling that's you in this fight, Renato. And that's pretty powerful. Well, because that's just three of us, and there are bazillions more.
Yes,
you know what I'm saying?
There are. And I just want to say that listening to what Renato just said, it kind of makes me feel better because there is this, you know, I hate using the word fear, but it's like this fear that Trump's going to just get away with all of this. And, you know, as human beings, we want to see justice. We want to see him punished. We want to see him pay for what he's done. And the truth of the matter is we may not get to see that. But what we might get out of this is, at least for a while, is a more energized electorate, people who are, you know, I also just want to take this time to thank Renato because, you know, back in October, I believe you announced that you were running for Illinois Attorney General and you asked if I might help amplify your campaign, which of course I did. And I brought the topic of the Equal Rights Amendment up to both you and Alyssa, and you guys like ran with it. You don't even know how much that made me happy because this is just, you know, it's something that I was introduced to in 2012 by a woman named Kamala Lopez, who was making a documentary about it. And as soon as I heard that she took on the ERA or that we didn't have the ERA in the Constitution, I took on that issue and started writing about it and eventually did some speeches and this and that. So bringing it up to you, I know you became fiercely, you know, passionate about it. You spoke there is a whole bunch of women in Illinois who were working on ratifying it. And I know that you were right there with them. Alyssa recently just spoke at a closed or I can't remember, some kind of a hearing talking about the ERA. So what I, you know, and I'm so grateful and I'm so glad that you are a man who understood the importance of it, because it's not just about women, it's just equality in the Constitution for gender. But I think the most positive thing that I can take from talking to you today is that while we may not see that justice with Trump and his mobster gang, maybe the benefit is that we can heal from this, and for at least a generation, we have more people voting. I mean, you look at what happens with these Parkland students and what they've been able to accomplish, and you know, young people, David Hogg, talking about whether it's the NRA. He even talks about the ERA. So I'm very hopeful that this is going to kind of start a new kind of an American electorate, you know, like excitement for voting. And I hope that that, you know, I hope that that happens, because there's also the thing of, like you had mentioned, Renato, that at least you said with the women coming together, they don't necessarily have that. But what they did have is when Obama won in 2010, the Tea Party was obviously very, very mobilized. And they successfully were able to, you know, get a lot of seats. So in 2010 and 2014, they were mobilized because of the president, and they were able to basically dominate Congress. So my hope is that, outside of the fact that I'd like to dominate Congress and also get a Democratic president, that we keep this going. And I think that things have been so terrible and awful, with children being ripped from their families, from blatant treason that he just admitted in front of the entire world. I hope that that's enough to keep us going beyond two or three elections. So that's my hopeful commentary.
And that is my, I will say that is mine as well. You know, to be very frank, you know, there have been some real positive developments, even in these dark times. You know, the Me Too movement, for example, yeah, is something that really may not have come together in the way it did if it weren't for the election of Donald Trump. And there is a real energy and excitement and new people involved in the process, you know, I see on the ground here in Illinois, due to his election. You know, for example, you know, you had talked about the Equal Rights Amendment. You had, you know, really taught me a lot about that. But, you know, as I went around Illinois, I met amazing women who were so energized by that issue and were working so hard. Many of them were running for office for the first time, you know, down in, you know, a more rural, less urban area of Illinois, down in McLean County. There's a whole slew of women who are running for the first time for a whole bunch of different offices. I'm going down soon to do a fundraiser to support them. And I was down there helping them during my campaign. And it's amazing to me that, you know, women everywhere have become energized, and men as well. But, you know, there are people who are getting brought to the political process for the first time. Like you said, what happened with the Tea Party, you know, hopefully this can move the debate forward in a really positive way and change our politics a little bit. We need that.
Definitely. Yep. Well, do you have anything else to say, Steph?
No, I mean, yes. Why did I say no? Of course I do. You know what? This, let's end on a super just positive run here. I have a 10-year-old daughter. I have a 14-year-old son. My kids have seen me, you know, get on a plane to go to DC to march with women after, you know, and protest Trump's inauguration. They have marched with their father here in my absence. They've marched with me. They are very concerned about gun safety in this country. And my daughter said to me yesterday, "Mommy, are those Parkland kids really coming on Sunday? Because they're coming to Oakland. They're on their national tour." And I said, "Yes, they are. And we are making signs and we're going out." And my little girl looked at me and said, "Emma Gonzalez is my hero." Aww. And so if that doesn't give you hope for the future and the generations to come, then I really don't know what can give you hope. We've got such a bright future with these kids who are growing up active and aware of the difference between right and wrong, and seeing, you know, our next assembly member in our dining room, Andrew Jans coming up from Fresno and sitting at our kitchen table. They know that it's accessible, and they know they can have a hand in changing the course of history. And so that really, that gives me so much hope. And talking to people like you, Renato, just texting with Kimberly sometimes gives me hope for, you know, what, you know, pull up the bootstraps and let's go. Because here, you know, we can't be tired. We've got to keep going. So anyway, I want to echo Kimberly and say thank you, because you have a huge platform. You are an expert in so many areas, especially where, you know, law is concerned, of course. But yeah, it matters that we have these conversations, that we continue to do that. And it's not over in November, and it's not over two Novembers from now. Yeah. It's forever.
It's forever. Yeah, it absolutely Woo! Is.
Hell yeah.
So why don't you tell everybody where to find you, Renato?
So I doubt people are going to be able to spell my name. It's Renato, is R-E-N-A-T-O. Last name is M-A-R-I-O-T-T-I. You can find me on Twitter. At Renato_Mariotti. You can find me on Instagram, same handle. You can find me on Snap at Renato.Mariotti. And on Facebook at Renato Mariotti Official. So you can find me at all those places. And there is more to come from me, working on my own podcast that'll be out soon, and then also working on an advocacy organization related to protecting our elections. And it's the issue we talked about earlier today.
Well, thank you. I mean, really, seriously, I love your tweets. I retweet you all the time.
Me too.
You help all of us get through this and understand, you know, like how to break it all down. And and you make it easy for us to understand. So yeah. Seriously, thank you. Thank you so much. And thank you for talking with us today.
Yes.
Anytime.
Thanks, Renato.
Thank you both.
All right. Okay. Take care. We'll talk to you soon.
All right. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Oh, wow. Well, that's...
love him.
I know. He's so smart. And
I'm putting him on the list.
Okay. So just what that means, people, is in our End Another Thing segment, we're going to talk about resistance dudes we want to do.
And Not just dudes. Resistance fighters.
Okay, fighters.
And it's more
of
a mental
you said
do.
Dude, so I'm just going to go.
I know, but I added because I put Joyce Vance. I mean,
but
we can't.
But don't tell
good.
You. Just that. That's a teaser. That's a teaser.
Keep it. I know what it is, but I'm clarifying because I don't want to alienate anybody. And this isn't for actual sex.
No.
This is for like mind doing.
Yeah, we're gonna go over our lists of people that we want to mentally. Love. And another thing,
yeah!
We have other things that we're going to talk about. So like I said, you can become a monthly subscriber at patreon.com/startmeup. $5 gets you into another
$5
and another thing. That's $5 a month, once a month. So,
Correction,
or you could
Phil
just do
Collins.
$1 and support us, but you know, $5 gets you into a little
five
personal,
is good.
Yeah.
$5 is real good.
Please. Anyway. All right. Moving on. See you next time.
Today.